I'd like to call the Transportation Finance and Policy Division to order. Do we have a quorum? Not yet. I think we do now. Two of them. We don't have a quorum. Oh, no, we do have a quorum now. That's right. So, for the members, if you look at your minutes.
I didn't bring the bill. I don't even have a house.
Oh, not.
Representative Newton, have you checked your minutes?
Yes, we can do it. I'd like to move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The minutes have been moved. Any questions or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Minutes are approved. Today we have, we hope, a shorter agenda, and Representative Hausman, I think I'll let her do all the explaining, because basically what we'll have is a bill that will be laid over for possible inclusion to the bond bill, if there's a bond bill.
And Mr. Chair, I will move House File 263, and I will further move a technical amendment that Mr. Setman will explain to you. He just mentioned it to me, to get the money going the right direction.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Judge Shetton. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and we heard the companion to this bill in the Senate this afternoon, and there's just one fix to the bill that is on line 1.7. You should be able to remove the language that says for a grant to the Ramsey County Regional Railroad Authority, because as the federal grant recipient, those bonds come to the council. It was just an error, and I talked to Mr. Riley at Ramsey County, and they agreed that that's a simple simple edit.
So I will move that amendment.
The chair will repeat the deletion of line 1.7, delays for a grant to the Ramsey County Railroad Authority. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman moves that technical amendment. Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The amendment is approved.
And Mr. Chair, we are conscious of your wanting to move quickly. We have no testifiers. We are only giving you some very brief facts. There are a few new members of this committee, and so normally I would give you no facts, but to respect to the people who are new to the committee, you will note the map in the front. I don't talk about any single corridor anymore. I only talk about an entire map and an entire system that serves the whole region equitably. And so you see where Central Corridor fits in that whole system. It's an 11-mile link that links downtown Union Depot to the Hiawatha Light Rail Line in Minneapolis. It connects the two downtowns, the University of Minnesota, St. Paul's Midway Commercial District, and the state capitol. At the Union Depot, the vision we see in the future is that passengers will be able to transfer to local and intercity buses, Rust Line and Red Rock commuter rail, and high-speed rail, passenger rail through Amtrak. It has 16 light rail stations. It shares 5 with the Hiawatha Line. Just roughly the timeline, preliminary engineering, which was $45 million, began in the spring of 2007. Last 2 years, final design will begin this year. At a cost of $38 million, and construction would begin in the year 2010. And at that point, I'm still one of those who wants to push it in a two-year construction cycle instead of four, so we're still having that conversation. I just think if we can do for the 35W bridge, we can do this in a faster timeline. It's projected to provide over 43,000 rides a day by 2030. Virtually every one of these lines, however, all across the country, exceeds its ridership goals long before the dates projected, and we believe this one will too. It's currently home to 120,000 people and 280,000 jobs. By 2030, the number of jobs in the corridor is expected to grow to 345,000. The experience with the Hiawatha Light Rail Line gives us confidence in these projections. Half of the project cost will come from the federal government. The remainder will be shared by the state, Ramsey and Hennepin counties. And Mr. Shetman will give you the math on the final piece of this that we need and the timeline for that.
Mr. Shetman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Slide number three, which is on the back of the handout, you will see the 1% unfunded. That is the $8.5 million bond that Representative Hausman's bill would satisfy for the remaining share of the state's responsibility for Central Corridor. I will tell you that Governor Pawlenty is not entertaining a general obligation bond bill at this point in time, but we, as a federal grant recipient, I wanted to be available before the committee to explain how the funding works and just to let you know that Representative Hausman's bill would satisfy that remaining portion of the state share. And members, you need to have the state share in hand before you apply for a full funding grant agreement.
I understood. Is there a deadline in June?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, there is a deadline in June 30th of 2009. There's an expiration date for the counties to be able to pay the additional $8.5 million that they said they would cover in the event we don't have the state share for the remaining bonds for Central Corridor. And I've spoken with Commissioner McDonough and other members of the council just to have that conversation. And if we don't have these bonds in hand, the council will have to find a way to basically commit a certain amount of dollars to say that we have that in place for the remaining bonding for Central Corridor. However, what we could do is just commit those dollars and come back next year for the additional $8.5 million. However, our timeline does state that we would want to make a submission to receive a full funding grant agreement prior to that time. So the June 30th deadline that you talk about is correct, and we'll have to work that out if the bonds aren't appropriated this year.
So the kind of neat and clean little the item of most interest to you here, the funding sources, you can see the total project there, the 50% federal portion, Hennepin County, Ramsey County, the newly constituted CTIB, the state portion, and then the unfunded portion. That is our bill.
Rep. Dan Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you want to move quick today, so I just have a quick question, and certainly either Mr. Stetman or Representative Hausman can get back to me. One of the pressure points in the planning was the loss of on-street parking, and one of the last reports I saw about that, one of the plans had like 85% of the on-street parking would disappear as a result of the additional enhancements that were being considered. Has that issue been resolved, and if so, what percentage of on-street parking will still remain?
I have attended some of those neighborhood meetings on a number of unresolved issues, and I don't know whether you're able to say it's. I think we're still in discussion. It appears that is not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I'd be happy to follow up with you and the committee and maybe send a letter to the committee letting you know where we're at as far as the parking issue. At this point, I don't believe it has been satisfied yet, but we can at least tell you where we're at as far as negotiations and what it means to the parking situation on University Avenue.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson or Representative Hausman, either one. The this money is going to Met Council, correct?
Representative Hausman?
To Met Council.
The portion, I see the County Transit Improvement Board, I think that's probably the sales tax that passed in Chapter 152. I see this money in here too. Tell me who's going to build this line, run this line, or what their role is. Is this going to be a Met Council line, or is this going to be this County Transit Improvement Board line?
Mr. Shetman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the Metropolitan Council is the MPO, or the Metropolitan Planning Organization for the Metropolitan Area. So with that, we are the federal grant recipient for these dollars, so we will be the one building the line, operating it as well.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? If not, Representative Hausman, the bill will be laid over for possible consideration in the bond bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next testifier, we're going to have an overview of the public safety budget. And we have Mr. Campion, I believe.
Mr. Chair, good afternoon, members. Michael Campion is my name. I'm Commissioner of Public Safety. Mary Ellison is Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety, is here with me at the table. We have a structured format, somewhat, Mr. Chair. We know your time is very limited, so we will be concise and to the point. We have a fairly brief overview that will discuss our budget. And certainly we have, during the budget presentation, we will answer any questions. We also, Mr. Chair, and members have all of our division directors here that will answer any real specific questions if we have any. The mission of the Department of Public Safety is to protect citizens and communities. We do this through prevention, preparation, we respond, we recover, we educate, and we also enforce rules and laws. Our focus is on saving lives and providing efficient and effective services, and we maintain the public trust by developing very strong partnerships and relationships with various stakeholders and many disciplines throughout the entire state of Minnesota. With that, I'll turn it over for the specifics of our budget to Deputy Commissioner Ellison. Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Mary Ellison, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. I'm going to go through, in general, our budget appropriations and our expenditures, and then give a brief description of each division, and then ask each division director to come up as we're describing each division, and then they can say a few words and answer any questions that you have. Our 10 and 11 governor's budget recommendation, the total law funds for the biennium is $615,244,000. Of that amount, 3% comes from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, 29% or $182 million from the general fund. Trunk Highway is 29% of our funding, $175,568,000. State government special revenue is $121,988,000 or 20%. Miscellaneous special revenue is $115,882,000 or 19%. When we look at our 10 and 11 expenses by category, 11% or a little over $65 million is transferred to other units of government. Payments to individuals total 1% or about $3.8 million. Our compensation costs make up 47% of our budget or $288 million. Other operating costs total about $163 million. That's 26% of our budget. And then 15% or $95 million is passed on in the form of grants to private not-for-profit agencies and cities and counties. The governor's budget for 2010 and 11 in direct appropriations represents a 1% increase, representing the forecast base and the budget change items that we have before you.
Mr. Chair?
Richard Holbert.
Can you tell me in real dollars what the percent of increase is?
Pardon me? 1%
of 600. So, in other words, just for clarification.
1% of $615,244,000.
Right,
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, and I'll get that just.
My question is was there any increase in your base? So, the hard dollar number, 09, 010, 02, I mean, 0809 to 1011. I'm curious, was there increase in your forecast of base that's above and beyond the 1% above base?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, Representative, the increase in base funding that we have in this budget is primarily in the state government special revenue. That is basically our it is our 911 program, and we had a base adjustment, an increase of $7,654,000 the first year, $13,358,000 in the second year, and I can refer you to page 7 of your budget document. Not the handout, but
you don't have a budget document. I want gross numbers, 0809 versus 1011, what the difference in increase is. I don't really care, and this program or that program.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the accounts that come under the purview of the Transportation Committee, the increases that we have in here are $300,000 the first year and $600,000 the second year in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And those increases were spelled out in the laws of 2007 in the Transportation Funding Bill, where it specified in the session laws exactly what the base would be for 10 and 11 out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. I don't believe any of the other accounts that come under the purview of this committee has any type of base adjustments in the budget. In fact,
right.
There are no...
Mr. Chair, I know you really want to move. What I'm basically looking for is your gross dollar number for 08-09 versus your gross dollar for 10 and 11. And that's what I'm trying to figure out, because so often we hear percent over base, but nobody wants to tell us how much the base grew before we got an increase on top of it. That's what I'm trying to ascertain. And I think you can just email me or whatever, but because I think, Mr. Chair, you want to be done by 5 o'clock or something.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would refer you to, and I know you don't have that here, but I believe if you go to page 7 of the budget document, that lays out each one of the direct appropriation by fund, and then pages 9 and 10 of the budget document then spells out any type of adjustments that are made in our account. And overall, just to tell you that for the 2008 and 2009 biennium, we had all direct appropriations, all funds. We had a total of $608,330,000, and the total for the current biennium, the governor's rec, is $615,244,000. That's a 1% increase from what we had in the 2008 and 2009 biennium to what the governor's recommending for 2010 and 2011. And as I was explaining to you, the biggest increase that we have in here is approximately a 14.8% increase, and that's in the state government special revenue, which involves our 911 program or the and in the general fund. We have an overall reduction of 10.9% when you compare what was appropriated in the 2008 and 2009 biennium to what we have in 2010 and 2011. There's actually a decrease because there were a lot of one-time appropriations that were made in the laws of 2007.
Right. That's the jurisdiction of this committee. That portion is that what you're talking? Well, that was the total one you're talking. But the total public safety, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, I'm referring to the total of public safety. I did not have it broken out by transportation versus the public safety portion of it, but I know that the general fund portion that falls under your committee is very small in comparison to our overall budget. The majority of our general fund dollars are under the purview of the public safety committee. Likewise, almost all the trunk highway dollars fall under the purview of this committee, as well as the highway user tax distribution fund dollars. And majority of the miscellaneous special revenue dollars also fall under this, the purview of the Transportation Finance Committee.
Justin Holberg, do you want...
Is it enough for now? I didn't want to wait.
Okay. Would you identify yourself to this?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Frank Ahrens, Finance Director for the Department.
Thank you. State Commissioner... Yeah. Commissioner Ellison, I believe you're still on.
The budget change item that we have before you is in the DWI, involves the DWI testing program. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension operates a statewide DWI testing program with intoxilizers at 200 law enforcement locations around the state. Prior to the fiscal year 2002-03 biennium, the program was funded by trunk highway money. The governor proposes returning funding for this initiative, which is $1.57 million per year, to the Trunk Highway Fund. So it's a transfer from the general fund to the Trunk Highway Fund. The State Patrol makes close to 20% of DWI arrests, and this is an obvious traffic safety issue, on roadways throughout the state.
So this is not a net increase or decrease to our budget, but is a transfer of this expense from the general fund to the Trunk Highway Fund.
Representative Hortman?
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask what percentage of your work is related to drunk driving at the State Patrol, if you have a guess or a real number.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman, I don't have that number. I can certainly ask Colonel Donaski if he does. I can tell you that in preparation for talking about this budget item, we looked at the amount of deaths on the roadways related to alcohol that are serious injuries and fatalities, and about 40% of them are on either the trunk highway system or the interstate system. In terms of how much of the patrol's work is dedicated to DWI enforcement, I would ask Colonel Donaski to talk about that perhaps when he comes up in a few minutes. Is that okay?
You may proceed.
The public safety divisions, as Mr. Aarons mentioned, include Homeland Security and Emergency Management, Office of Justice Programs, Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Emergency Communications Networks, and the State Fire Marshal's Office. Those divisions within public safety are heard in the public safety committees of the House and Senate, and so we won't be spending time on those particular divisions this afternoon. The transportation divisions that are within this division include the Minnesota State Patrol, Driver and Vehicle Services, the Office of Traffic Safety, Administration and Related Services, and the Office of Pipeline Safety, which is in the State Fire Marshal's Office. I'll talk just briefly about the State Patrol and ask Colonel Donaski to come forward. The mission of the State Patrol is to protect and serve all people in the state through assistance, education, and enforcement, provide support to allied agencies, and provide for the safe and efficient movement of traffic on Minnesota's roadways. The annual operating budget of the State Patrol is $82 million, $406,000 for fiscal year 2009, and they have a staff of 954 full-time equivalent positions. For the 2010 and 2011 biennium, for the total budget, $158,328,000 comes from the Trunk Highway Fund, $184,000 from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and $6.3 million from the General Fund. And I'll ask Colonel Donaski to just say a few words.
Well, welcome to the committee, Colonel.
Mr. Chair, members, Mark Donaski, representing the Minnesota State Patrol. I'll be very brief. Testified in the House and the Senate, as Commissioner Champion has mentioned, we had a very successful year, we feel, last year with a significant reduction in fatalities and traffic crashes on Minnesota roadways. But I suspect that this committee is probably more interested in what we're trying to do to be more efficient in our processes. And so very briefly, we've been working actually over the last 2 years looking at more efficient ways of conducting our operations out there without losing the effectiveness of the Minnesota State Patrol. Just a couple of items that we're moving forward. Within the next 2 weeks, the Minnesota State Patrol and the Commissioner of Public Safety will announce that we are in a 911. As you're probably aware, we have 911 centers throughout the state of Minnesota. We have 10 of them. We're proposing a consolidation of those centers to somewhat less than, significantly less than the 10 centers that we have out there. In addition, we're moving forward with consolidating two metropolitan districts of the State Patrol, our East Metro District and our West Metro District, into one consolidated metropolitan district. We're reducing the size of our aircraft fleet by approximately 25%. We found that through some, innovations, but we feel that we can reduce our fuel costs by 1 to 2% simply by the method of payment that we have with the state credit card vendor, that we'll be able to see a significant reduction. We're going to increase the mileage on our squad cars by approximately 25 to 30% over the course of the biennium. And we're directing our patrol operations more to a data-driven program where we're looking at issues such as DWI and speed, where the crashes are happening, and scheduling and putting our people at those places at those times rather than the more random patrols. And with that, I guess I will hold for any questions that anybody might have.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel, can you tell me again about the 911 dispatching centers? How many we have now and how many you're going to reduce it down to? I didn't quite get that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, currently the Minnesota State Patrol operates 10 what we refer to as POCCs. They're co-located with the Department of Transportation. We have underway a study going on looking at those POCCs, particularly in light of the rollout of the ARMR system, the new 800 megahertz radio system that's going to become the backbone for safe communications within 2 years. In light of that new system, we're looking at reducing the number from 10 to significantly less than that. The report hasn't been completed, but we do anticipate within the next 30 days the report will be out, and the Commissioner of Public Safety, I'm sure, will announce what the State Patrol will be doing with that reduction.
And Mr. Chair, just to follow up, by significantly less, that means more than, I hope more than one.
Mr. Chair?
Colonel.
Mm-hmm. Significantly less.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry if I missed it, if you did answer the question about what proportion of the workload you think of the State Patrol is related to drunk driving.
Mr. Chair,
did you get that, Colonel?
Representative, I don't know the exact percentage. Annually, and it goes up and down depending on weather and other conditions. The Minnesota State Patrol makes approximately 7,000 DUI arrests a year. Over the course of a year, the number of citations and warnings they write is approximately 500,000. So in terms of other violations and time that's spent, keep in mind that a DWI arrest takes a significant amount of time from the standpoint of from the time of stop to the processing through the county jails to the report writing and then subsequently to the implied consent program and then ultimately to go to trial. So it's very difficult to compare a citation issued for speeding and a DWI arrest because it do take a significant amount of time.
Representative Horton.
Then with regard to the impact on the public, would you say then the types of offenses that you're involved in that involve alcohol pose a greater risk to driving public than some of the other offenses you're involved in enforcing?
Colonel.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's difficult for me to say that one is greater than the other. As was mentioned, I would defer to the Office of Traffic Safety, I think about 34% of the fatalities in the state of Minnesota are alcohol-related. So it's about a third of the crashes that are out there. But that shouldn't take away from inattentive driving and speeding taking their toll on our citizens as well. So we try to focus across the board and put people at times and places where we're going to have the greatest effect.
One final comment. I just want to congratulate your department in the role that you played in the Tour Zero deaths, getting the deaths on Minnesota's highways down to such a low number last year. It's a fantastic achievement. And everybody at the State Patrol should be extremely proud of the work that you did.
Representative, thank you very much.
Representative Chapman?
Champion, that's champion right there. Champion, I'm champion. Officer, would you say, I heard you talking about the use of technology and how it's benefited it benefits the department. Would you say that it would allow you to collect any data by race as well as stop made in location now that you have great use of this technology?
Colonel?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's an interesting question. We are on the edge of being able to do that. The Minnesota State Patrol has a record management system, commonly referred to as an RMS system, that we're moving forward with and trying to develop. And we currently do capture some information on traffic stops. The amount of information really is limited at this point because the record management system is rolling out. As technology improves, though, there is obviously the potential for gathering more information on traffic stops, not only traffic stops, but more importantly from crashes and from DWI arrests. So once again, we can take that information and focus our attention in times and places when we're going to have the greatest impact.
Thank you so much.
No further questions. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next division is our Driver and Vehicle Services Division. Their mission is to provide fair, accurate, secure, timely service through effective service options, accurate collection of data, fraud prevention, efficient collection of state revenues, and quality information and technical support to staff and our business partners. DVS has an annual budget of approximately $55.6 million with 534 employees working in 98 locations throughout the state. DVS collects over $1 billion in state revenue for the state of Minnesota. DVS is funded through a special revenue fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And I'll ask Pat McCormick to say
welcome something. Welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And DVS has been trying to make great strides in achieving its goals in order to give our customers fair, accurate, secure, and timely service. And some of the things that we have been doing have been to pave the way for the new information system. I talked a little bit about that a few weeks ago, We are still on track in terms of collecting the funding that we need, approximately $1 million a month. We are working on our redesign plan and getting that finalized. At this time, we are also re-engineering and working with our staff on re-engineering business processes so that we can effectively utilize a new system when it's redesigned and built. And along those lines, we have also been working on some of the projects. One that was mentioned by Representative Severson at the last meeting, which is our electronic vehicle title and registration system that we work on with dealers. And I wanted to bring bring you up to date on that. That's been in place since the late fall of 2007, and during the first year we've had 49 dealers working on it with 23 deputy registrars, and they have processed close to 6,000 title applications, and that allows for a streamlined process where the data is only entered once and is able to be moved electronically between the dealer's office to the deputy registrar to our office. There is a fee that the customer pays for that, and it's an optional fee if they request that service. In addition, we have also been able to use online service transactions for our motor carriers, and in 2008, 38% of our motor carriers processed self-service transactions. That's an increase of over 15% during that year, and this enables motor carriers to access online wherever they are or across any location across the whole United States, so that if they're not in Minnesota at the time, they can still make their they can pay their taxes and registration fees as they need to wherever they are located. In addition to that, we've been working on a pilot project to try to use a fax system where the faxes go right to the customer or the staff's computers, so that we've been able to try to make our disability certificates more helpful to customers. It can go right from the health clinic to the staff person's office so that we can get those issued in a more timely fashion. We're just in a pilot mode right now, but that's working very well. And so we're trying very hard to find ways that we can connect better with our customers and find better ways to improve our processes that will also be helped once we redesign our system. And with that, I can answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions? Apparently not. Thank you, Ms. McCormick.
The Office of Traffic Safety is the next division we'll cover. Their mission is to move Minnesota towards zero deaths on our roadways through multidisciplinary applications of education, engineering, enforcement, and emergency medical services driven by data, best practice, and research. The Office of Traffic Safety receives an annual appropriation from the Trunk Highway Fund of $435,000, which is a required match, which allows the office to secure federal funds, grants, and one-time monies that annually amount to about $28 million per year. I'll ask Director Marty to say a few words.
Welcome to the committee, Director Marty.
Thank you very much, Chairman and members of the committee. As I think you all are very aware, that traffic crashes are the leading cause of death here in Minnesota from ages 1 to 34. On average, we have about 500 individuals that are dying on our roadways, and 35,000 folks are being injured in traffic crashes each year. So this is something that we are truly concerned about, and Mr. Chair and Representative Portman, I thank you for your recognition of the Towards Zero Death program. This is an initiative that the Department of Public Safety, Department of Transportation, and the Department of Health, together with local communities all around the state, have come together and said we need to employ engineering strategies, enforcement strategies, emergency medical response, as well as education, and we need to take an interdisciplinary approach to make a difference in reducing these traffic fatalities. And our goal, our vision, is that no one dies on our roadways. So we are very proud of the fact that we are making a difference, and of the fact that we had a 13% decrease in traffic fatalities in 2008. We were at 510 fatalities, and that was reduced to 441 in 2008. So that is significant, and it's because of all of these multidiscipline countermeasures that are working together that are making the difference. I do want to thank this committee for the support of effective traffic safety legislation. We simply could not make that kind of difference without legislation that helps people change their behavior behind the wheel. I do want to offer that when a fatal crash occurs, 93% of the reason why that fatal crash happened in the first place is in fact because of driver behavior. And it's your work and your legislation that helps to guide drivers in making better choices behind the wheel. The programs of the Office of Traffic Safety are really combined to support the 4E approach that I just mentioned: engineering, enforcement, education, and emergency medical response. You can see up on your screen, we have a variety of programs, and most of our funding of our office, of which it averages around $28 million a year, most of that funding goes back out into the community, because traffic safety is a local problem. People in the communities need to understand why are crashes occurring on their roadways. What's happening in northwest Minnesota might be very different than what's happening in southeast Minnesota. We need to look at those crashes, understand what's the data telling us about speeding, about young drivers, distracted driving, impaired driving, and then we need to employ strategies designed for that local community. And essentially, all of our programs are designed to support those local community efforts. As you can see, we have a broad range of occupant protection, child passenger safety. We work on teen drivers. What's not listed on the slide is older drivers. That's an emerging need of our office that we're continuing to work with states to develop a model program for older driver safety. That's something that we just started this year. Some of our successes, we've already talked about our low fatality rate that decreased by 13%. Minnesota is the second in the nation, only to Massachusetts, that has a lower fatality rate per 100 million vehicle miles traveled. That's significant, and we're very proud of that fact that we've achieved that. Our nation does struggle with reducing the number of alcohol-related traffic fatalities, and Minnesota shares that struggle. However, we do commit about $2 million of federal funds each year to fight that battle, and we are among the lower states in terms of having about a 30% rate of our fatalities that are alcohol-related. Also, with the support of the legislature, we were able to, we worked in support of the legislature to pass graduated driver's licensing as well as text messaging, and we worked very hard to educate the community on the importance of those laws and how parents can work with their kids in effectively keeping them safe behind the wheel. So these are just a few of the highlights, and I would welcome any questions.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Marty, I'm working on the traffic safety, crash outcome, fatal analysis record system. I'm assuming that MnDOT is the ultimate recipient of most of this stuff, particularly when it's not driver-related, but it could be roadway or signals or things like that. Can you describe, is there someone from MnDOT that's like a liaison or that is part of the teams that research this stuff, or how does that actually get to real engineers that actually repave stuff and restripe highways and so on?
Ms. Marty.
Representative Beard, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are working closely with MnDOT on the Towards Zero Death program, so their traffic safety office is talking with me throughout the week. We meet with them regularly, and we together share that traffic data information, and we look at the state, and we analyze that data, and we identify what are the opportunities for improvement, both engineering opportunities that MnDOT and local government would employ, as well as the behavior. So we're working very closely. You had mentioned the code study, the crash outcome data evaluation program. That we're actually working with the Department of Health. And that program essentially links the outcome of crashes in terms of medical outcomes and linking that with crash data. And we're trying to establish the cost associated with certain types of crashes in terms of injuries. And what is that costing society? What are the health care costs to those crashes? So that specifically speaks to codes.
Ms. Chair, one quick follow-up. You triggered another thought, Ms. Marty. When we're doing accident reconstruction and so on, that's probably a state patrol function. Do we have a MnDOT engineer that also tags along on that team, or they have direct? Are they a direct recipient of those reports as well, or does that come through this whole program?
Ms. Barty?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I might need to turn to the State Patrol to answer this specifically, but I do know that the accident reconstruction is done by law enforcement. MnDOT, that information is available to the engineers, the local engineers, so they can share in that. I do know that our safe communities around the state, they do have a fatal accident review committee. That will include the engineer as well as the medical people within that community, school officials, law enforcement. They all take a multidisciplinary approach in reviewing that fatality and trying to understand what are the factors that contributed to that fatality.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Marty, I want to echo Representative Portman's compliments to you and your office. And I didn't notice a specific bullet point on distracted driving. I don't know mm-hmm. if that's included in impaired driving, and certainly appreciate the help on the text messaging. But it seems to me that we are really in a new era here with cell phones texting people using the Internet while they drive. And I'm wondering if the department has a kind of a strategic plan around distracted driving, and do you have any thoughts or advice for the legislature on how to deal with that issue, and what are you seeing in terms of data and accidents related mm-hmm. to that?
Ms. Marty?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what we do know about distracted driving is that conservatively, driver distraction is a factor contributing to 25% of all crashes. That's a very conservative number. The reason being is driver distraction, whether you're eating on your cell phone, texting, reaching for your CD, these are all very underreported. If there is a crash, the driver is not going to admit to engaging in some kind of distracted driving. So conservatively, it's 25% of why crashes occur. Our office's approach really has been to try to educate the community on the dangers of distracted driving, the fact that driving itself is a multitasking activity. There's a lot to pay attention to. In addition to driving itself, when you engage in these other activities, you're putting yourself and everyone else on the road at risk. So in terms of our strategic plan, we are right now working with the State Patrol, with the Department of Health, the Department of Transportation. We are working on our strategic plan, and we are identifying our strategic goals and strategies and specific measures for how to achieve our goals. So I'd like to tell you that we are in the midst of creating that plan this Friday. We are planning to wrap it up, and we are going to engage the communities of how can we reach our goals in moving Minnesota towards zero deaths, and we've got to address this factor of distracted driving. And I think it's difficult because we can't quite document how often this is occurring, but I think the best approach is to continue to have strong legislation as well as educating the communities on the dangers.
Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Marty. And this might be a question for you or the Colonel there. I have a son that's going to be getting his driver's license next month, and we were discussing this the other day up mm-hmm. on the second floor and with my son. What are the laws for newly licensed drivers as mm-hmm. far as cell phone usage? Is there anything in place right now, and if so, how long is that enforced? And
Ms. Marty?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for a provisional license holder, they are not able to use their cell phone, so it is prohibited. Unless it's an emergency situation and they need to pull over and call, they can do that. But otherwise, it is completely prohibited.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm, you're welcome.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you give us the latest statistics for seatbelt use compliance? Did we hit the more than 85% for the second year in a row? And if so, how much money are we getting and how are you spending it?
Okay.
Ms. Marty.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the current seatbelt use rate in Minnesota is 87.8%, and that is the second consecutive year that we've achieved over 85% seatbelt use rate in the state. That qualifies us for federal incentive money, which what will be coming to Minnesota is $15.2 million. That is money that both MnDOT, the Department of Transportation, as well as the Department of Public Safety will be sharing, looking at infrastructure, road safety improvements, as well as driver behavior, education, outreach, and enforcement efforts.
Thank you. And we did that all without primary seatbelts.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Marty, I've got a question about wildlife crashes. Does your office keep track of that, or do you have any statistics you could get me on that and the trends of what's going on with the deer crashes, especially? Last year, Mr. Chairman, I was driving back home, and I was witness to one of the big turkeys we've been putting out there. I hit the front of his pickup, and I got his attention, and when it got his attention, it got mine, too. So I just want to know, do you do that, or DNR, or who's doing it, and who can get me some numbers on some of these crashes that are, I don't know if the deer are drinking too much or what they're doing.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, deer crashes are increasing. It's a growing problem, particularly during the mating season. It becomes even greater problem, hours at dusk. It is a huge problem. We can get you that information, and we're happy to do that. We do know that when a driver comes upon a deer, the best thing is don't veer for the deer, but go straight forward. Because you're putting yourself at greater risk when you do veer, and you might run off the road and run into some bigger problems.
Representative Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Marty, if we were to pass primary seatbelts in Minnesota, would we be entitled to additional federal funds? And if so, how much? And do you think that we should adopt primary seatbelts?
That was just a statement, I think.
Mr. Chair, there was a question there. He doesn't have to answer the last part. That's okay. That's maybe a governor's office question, but on the dollars, that would be very helpful.
Sure.
Ms. Marty.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if we adopt primary seatbelt this year, we will be candidate for up to $3.9 million of federal money. That money will go towards road safety improvements as well as driver behavior programs together. And I will say that we do feel strongly that primary seatbelt will make a big difference. Right now, although we have a high seatbelt use rate, that 13% of unbelted drivers account for 700,000 or 800,000 drivers in Minnesota that are not buckling up. And it's costing us, it's costing society. There's many preventable hospital charges, $25 million a year are prevented if these unbelted crashes didn't occur. So we know that if we pass primary seatbelt, we would save at least 30 lives and 400 serious injuries each year.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to talk about turkeys, but I will ask about head-on collisions on two-lane highways. I'm just going to ask for statistics on that. That continues to be a deep concern, again, in my district yesterday, and I would request information on head-on collisions on two-lane county roads.
Okay.
Could you do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, yes, we can, and we do know that 80% of our fatalities are occurring on rural roads.
Representative Champion,
would additional education outside of the primary seatbelt would really get us to a place of changing drivers' behavior?
Ms. Marty.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, education is important, and we want to make sure that we're giving people accurate information. We do know that young drivers, in particular, males in pickup trucks, they're dying at higher rates because of unbelted crashes. So we do plan to continue to target our outreach efforts to those audiences that are at greater risk for unbelted fatalities and serious injuries. Education makes a difference, but I will say the 13% that continue to refuse to buckle up, we believe that a primary seatbelt law will give an added incentive and motive for them to want to buckle up.
You would also have a committee
follow-up question? One last follow-up question, I promise.
Okay.
Isn't it true that in your own analysis that you all believe that there's no way that you can get above 93% compliance when we think in terms of drivers compliant with seatbelts, even if you had a primary seatbelt law?
What we have seen, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what we've seen with other states that have moved from secondary to primary, on average, they've moved about 10% in their seatbelt use rate. Now, because we are at such a high percent, after talking with our partners with the Towards Zero Death program, we have confidence that we could achieve at least 95% seatbelt use rate. That may not happen in the first year, but Michigan right now, that is a primary state, they have achieved 97% seatbelt use rate. And we think that we could achieve at least 95%.
For the members of the committee, seatbelt is one of the bills that's coming up in the next 2 weeks, and we probably could vote on it today, but I think we maybe should move ahead.
Yes,
thank you, Ms. Marty. We have more. Commissioner? We still have one. Okay.
Very quickly, the administration and related services includes the Office of Communications, the Commissioner's Office, Human Resources, Fiscal and Administrative Services, and the Office of Technology and Support Services. And then finally, we have the Office of Pipeline Safety. Their mission is to protect lives, property, and the environment through the implementation of a program of gas and hazardous liquid pipeline inspections, enforcement, accident, and incident investigations, and education. Their money comes through a special revenue fund, and also that is matched with federal funds. That equals $2.25 million a year. And $1.35 million a year is direct appropriation special revenue derived from inspection fees and excavation damage prevention penalties. And I'll ask Fire Marshal Rosendahl to tell you a little bit more.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, Jerry Rosendahl, State Fire Marshal. That position also carries the title of Director of Pipeline Safety in Minnesota. MNOPS, the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety, was created in 1987 following a major pipeline release that ignited and caused a fatal fire in Moundsview, Minnesota. In 2008, the office conducted nearly 300 inspections of pipeline companies who operate over 65,000 miles of pipeline in Minnesota. In 2009, there are several major pipeline projects in the works, including nearly 900 miles large diameter high-pressure interstate hazardous liquid pipeline, and also 80 miles of large-diameter high-pressure intrastate and interstate natural gas transmission pipelines in the Clearbrook to Canada area, and also Superior crossing northern Minnesota up into Canada. The office also investigated nearly 200 pipeline-related incidents in 2008. Most of these are reported to us through the Minnesota duty officer and are caused by a third party digging into a pipeline. MNOPS enforces the damage prevention law known as Gopher State One Call. The combination of enforcement actions and prevention education has contributed to a reduction of damages to gas and electric facilities by nearly 70% since 1996. And on the budget, there is no general fund money in the pipeline safety budget. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that concludes our testimony. If you would like to have any other, are there any other questions?
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, for Mr. Rosendahl, you have special revenue funds. Your funds are acquired from the people you serve, correct?
Mr. Chair and members, the special revenue comes from the billing of the pipeline operators after we deduct the federal funding that we receive for doing the interstate inspection.
Do you have a balance in that account? And if you do, you may want to consider spending it down. I understand we're looking for loose change, right?
We're aware of that.
Yeah.
Representative Dimmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question about farm taps. I've heard about this. I've even done a little research into it, and there's a lot of stuff out there. A lot of work's been done, and I've talked to utilities. But if somebody calls Gopher State One Call and says, you know, I bought this place, it's a farmer, I bought this place years ago, I know I'm getting natural gas, I'm paying for it, I don't know where the pipeline goes, what happens?
Mr. Chair and members, the farm tap issue deals with from the meter beyond into the private property, so it does not come under the normal state or federal laws in terms of inspection or even under that particular law. So the issue is the property owners, as Representative Dimmer described, don't know where this is at. What we have been having a line of communications on for a couple years at least
down in your particular area, as a matter of fact, with the person who deals with that, and they're trying to figure out how we can get the operators. In many cases, it's a propane tank, and then the owner buries it to a shed and then to a barn. In other cases, they do their own, and even the propane companies, the gas companies, don't realize where all these lines are. So we're trying to look at the whole issue of best available information and try to get them to provide that information. But it's a tough one because it's a private property issue.
Any further? You have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have the technology to figure out where they are? I mean, if I call you and say, I don't know where it is, but I got to find it because we're going to do some stuff, can you help me? Do you have the technology to do that? And do I pay for it? What does it cost? Can you give me an idea about that?
Mr. Rosenblatt.
Mr. Chair and members, the technology that companies use now to locate their lines essentially is put a signal on what the supply end and the other end, and they essentially can trace it. Just so you understand, too, the Gopher State One Call is a separate body. That's not part of the Office of Pipeline Safety. We oversee that particular area. Gopher State One Call also just provides notice to all of the operators of these lines and say they're going to be digging in a particular area, and then they go out and do their marking. So at this point, there's nobody paying for doing that, and it's more who would do it and how would they get paid for that as opposed to the technology.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, do you have any rules on people doing their own piping, or would that be a local zoning issue, like in the situation you're talking about with Representative Demmer?
Mr. Rosenwald.
Mr. Chairman and members, once it goes past the right-of-way, the meter is set for the utility operator. It's a local type of issue. There isn't anything that we get involved with.
And then just two real quick questions. Do you check to determine whether a pipeline is leaking, or do the companies that own the pipelines check to see whether they're leaking, whether it's natural gas or oil or whatever? And then the second question is, are you completely self-supporting with the fees that you collect?
Mr. Chair and members, the pipeline companies are required to do certain leak checks on an ongoing basis. Our role is to make sure they're doing it. Part of our inspections at all of these operators is to check their records and then spot check that they're doing that and follow through on any leaks and damages. And in terms of the cost of operating the office, it is fully supported because, again, basically what we get from the federal funds, the remainder of the operating costs are billed to the operators.
Any further questions? If not, Commissioner Campion, you got out pretty easy.
For now, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much, both commissioners. If there are no further questions, the next meeting we have is February 17th. I think I got the date right. And the meeting is adjourned. And for the DFL,